Support for Boston Public Radio comes from Eastern Bank. Eastern Bank is committed to helping people and businesses prosper, investing over $240 million in local charities since 1994. Eastern Bank. Join us for good. EasternBank.com. Member FDIC.
And Davis Mom. Their tax lawyers are committed to your most taxing matters. Learn more at DavisMom.com. That's DavisMalm.com. Davis Mom. Lean. Agile. Strategic.
Special initiative that supports WGBH's education efforts for children and their families.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. Yesterday, President Trump gave turkeys, their names were peas and carrots, a chance.
Peas and carrots were two out of a group of 50 exceptional turkeys raised for this event. And you can see that by looking at them. Together, they are known as the presidential flock. After their good fortune today, peas and carrots will both live out the rest of their days at Gobbler's Rest on the campus of Virginia Tech, good place, where they will enjoy a beautiful private enclosure under the care of poultry science students and veterinarians. In other words, they're going to be well taken care of at Virginia Tech.
You better believe it. For presidential turkeys, hope wasn't always a thing with feathers. As you know, instead of giving them a pardon, some presidents apparently were being plating them with all the fixins. Instead, joining us to talk about this and more is food writer Corby Kummer. Corby's a senior editor at The Atlantic and a senior lecturer at the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition and Policy. Hello there, Corby Kummer.
Good morning.
Okay, Corby Kummer, I think the appropriate place to begin on this pre-Thanksgiving show is Times Magazine's investigative reporting on why we eat turkey in the first place.
Why we eat turkey in the first place is this atavistic tradition that we feel that we've got to, that it's at, that we're not allowed to say that we don't like it. It is completely, are you going to admit that you don't like turkey?
I don't like turkey.
I guess the answer is yes, she will.
But I think you do hear that where people say they have to, you know, drown it in gravy and mashed potatoes and mix it all together to make it taste good because it's so tasteless. Nobody says that?
Oh, well, if we talk about brining, I will easily say that. Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want to talk about brining. We'll get to that in a second. I want to talk about the genesis of this thing for a second. The theory is that when the pilgrims were having their, 1620 something or other with the Native Americans, that turkey was the protein of choice. There's no evidence that that's what they were eating. Is there?
Oh, no. There's absolutely no evidence that that's what they were eating. This is just a legend. It was a three-day diplomacy exercise between the pilgrims, the 51 of the 102 who survived,
right.
Which were not many at all, and it probably had some type of poultry, some kind of wild bird. Turkeys existed then, so it could have been. Shellfish, corn porridge, bread made from acorn meal. There was a wonderful book written by a woman I should remember in Maine. Maine is on the cover, about the first Thanksgiving. There's so many legends about it, but it's nothing like the Norman Rockwell picture.
Why do you think it is? I mean, getting back to the initial thing that you said to Marjorie, why is there the tyranny of turkey? Why is it? I mean, Marjorie is aberrational in this regard. Most people don't have the courage
to
say.
Do you like turkey? I don't think it's a matter of courage.
If you put turkey the next day on a great piece of bread with mayonnaise and lettuce. Are you kidding me? And stuffing. It is about as good as it gets. So, yes, I love it.
I don't think it compares chicken's much better.
Okay, fine. Put me aside for a minute. Why is it so hard for people to say, this is not my choice? I'm going to have a ham or I'm going to do fish or whatever other. Why is there the tyranny of turkey there, Corby Kummer?
It's cultural expectation. It's the idea that in order to join in this ritual that makes you feel a part of this country, a part of a group, a part of a family, it has to have this anchoring food right in the middle. It hardly matters that very few people like it, that it's an incredible ordeal to make, that it rarely tastes very good. The idea is you made it, you did the same thing that everybody else is doing. You feel like you belong to this country, this group, and you've, like, provided for your family. And so not to do that and to serve crab cakes, as a writer in a New York Times story said she was going to do, it's just wrong. You might as well do it any other day of the year, which leads to my question to you, Jim. Mm. You love turkey on bread the next day with the stuffing, but let's not talk about the bread on bread. How many other times a year do you have that?
Well, actually, I knew you were going to ask that question. And
Sorry.
I am very happy to say, no, I knew you were building up to it. I actually, maybe once or twice a year on a non-Thanksgiving day, buy a little turkey and cook the thing. You know why? It's really, first of all, you're right about the Thanksgiving thing, which I had not thought of. It's the sameness. It's like, to be a good American, you do what every other American, regardless of their political persuasion, does on the same day. But it is really, really easy to cook. And I will agree, turkey alone is not a very attractive kind of thing. But forget the sandwich the next day. You could smother it with stuff, as Marjorie said. Delicious gravy, fabulous stuffing. I happen to make very good stuffing, I should say, on day one. So the answer is I do have it from time to time. Now, you're a turkey disparager, just like Marjorie is, obviously. What's your protein of choice, or whatever you want to call it, on Thanksgiving there, Corby Comer?
Well, I mean, I'm going to have my cousin's turkey because he has spent days making it. He's roped in his son, whom I call my nephew, and love to spend 3 days, goodness knows what, brining it, whatever they're going to do. And I appreciate the effort, and it's to bring the family together. So I absolutely and fully plan to join in that, even while I loathe turkey.
Well, yeah, so, by the way, I'm not buying a turkey this year. I'm buying a smoked turkey. Either of you have had a smoked turkey?
No.
Fabulous. You've ever had a smoked turkey there, Corby Comer?
Of course I have. When I was a kid, my uncle, it was the one thing he made. He bought a special smoker. It was his show-off dish. He would spend days potchkeying with it, as we would
say. Potchkeying, I love that expression.
And take
that
the temperature.
And
he was enormously
it,
arrogant and proud of his smoked turkey.
Where do you get a smoked turkey?
A smoke shop.
Oh.
Andy Husband's joint. I mean, we've had him on.
Andy Husband's, who I was just thinking of this very minute. His name is on my computer screen.
Okay, so can we get, obviously,
Marjorie's... The brine.
So brining became huge like 20-plus years ago. Explain what it is. And then it has now fallen out of favor, and I don't quite understand why.
So brining is a good way of injecting tap water into your turkey and making it taste like luncheon meat that you get at any deli counter. And it pleases people because, as we've been avoiding saying, turkey has very little flavor and it is usually dry. And so there was this way around that, and that was soaking it in water with a lot of salt. And then you could add sugar and soy sauce and molasses and honey and rosemary and ginger and whatever else you wanted to try lamely to inject flavor into your meat. And indeed, the salt... helps dissolve the collagen between the muscle fiber, and so you can get this tap water right into your meat, and you can make it taste authentically soggy by changing the chemical balance within the turkey.
But so why was it such a big thing for, am I right about this? It was like sort of
because
at the
I think
turn
people,
of the century for, at, you go ahead, yeah.
The turn of this century,
this
1999,
century. Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry, yeah.
Kim Severson said in her very funny New York Times piece is year one for turkey brine. Why? Because it seemed scientific, because it seemed new, because it was fail-safe. If you do this, if you break down the tissues and the fibers in your turkey for 2 or 3 days in an enormous vat of water you have to keep in your refrigerator someplace, then you will get moist meat, and it will taste salty, and it will have some of the flavor you put into your brine. That was a big improvement over the very dry breast meat people hated.
You know, Corby Comer, our food expert, there's an interesting piece in here, and you do a lot of magazine work. I used to be at the Boston Magazine way back in the late 80s. But they talk about the covers of magazines, which are really important because even now with everything online, people buy things off newsstands based on the covers many times. And the only thing you want to have, apparently, on a cooking magazine in November is a turkey. Not a picture.
I have to say, I loved reading this story, which was in the New York Times. It was a survey of most print magazine editors, but themes that ran under it, since we're in the mag biz, is how few people there are on staffs anymore, the lower frequency of magazines, that means that Savour, for example, a really, really good magazine, is down to 5 or 6 issues a year. So they're not doing a Thanksgiving cover. They don't even have to because they're not coming out at Thanksgiving. And most places, they can't afford to have a whole parade of alternate turkeys, like models, seeing just how does the gravy spill and how butterscotchy is the turkey. So that's part of it. But one editor says at the beginning that she daringly put sliced turkey on her cover, but that it did terribly. And then at the end of the piece, we have a Food Network woman saying that sliced turkey was just as good or even performed better. So there's great confusion that we're going to have to clear up by next year over whether whole turkey or sliced turkey is more or less appealing on a cover.
So if people the point that you and Marjorie seem to be making is either there are a lot of people who don't like turkey at all, and those who do eat turkey do it somewhat grudgingly. I'm an exception to that rule. So if that's all true, why do magazine editors put something that people aren't really even crazy about
because
on their cover every
year?
Because
it is so iconic. And I would say, Jim, that Marjorie and I may be the Grinches of Thanksgiving, but plenty of people are perfectly fine with turkey. They like the drumstick, which usually, you know, dark meat has much more flavor. It's moister. It has more flavor. They don't hate turkey the way we do, so they're perfectly happy to do that. But it's participating. It's like having guacamole and chips at the Super Bowl and salsa. You have to do it.
I love
it's
guacamole,
there,
too.
It's what everyone else is doing.
That's fine,
so,
Jim. It's okay.
No, but, I mean, Corby's making it sound as like we're doing it because it's a tradition as opposed to liking the underlying thing. I love guacamole.
Okay. Oh, you know, I'm very
Jim.
Glad that you are defending your patriotism, but
I
have to
Apparently
remember
I
the
am.
Patriotic roots.
Okay,
what I didn't see was the crusade of the woman post-Lincoln, who was the editor of Ladies' Home Journal, and she had a letter-writing campaign to name the last Thursday of November Thanksgiving. She got it declared a national holiday. I believe it was in 1875, but she had begun petitioning Lincoln. Lincoln was the first person who pardoned a turkey, but that was Christmas turkey. The tradition was Christmas turkey. So Thanksgiving is an invented American holiday, and the iconic turkey that we all think we have to reproduce, and it does work. Warm our hearts when we see it, is a 1943 Norman Rockwell cover for the Saturday Evening Post. And 1943, that's the height of the war, World War II, when people felt they had to come together and express themselves as a nation.
Okay, before we get to the whole pardoning embarrassment that presidents go through, I never got into this at all. If Brining is a fraud, which you're apparently saying...
It's reliable. It's just not good.
Okay, so what is good? We're at the end of the show, we're going to talk about some food tips ourselves as real people, not as food experts, expert like you. What's the preferred preparation that makes turkey as palatable as it can be for the likes of you and Marjorie? What's your suggestion?
Well, I'll go for dry brining, which is indeed salting heavily the turkey. But you salt it, you make a sort of dry paste, which is something Andy Husbands loves, by the way, of salt and herbs and spices. You rub it on the bird, and it both dries out the skin and makes it wonderfully crackling, and it also flavors the meat because the salt that you put on the outside and when you rub it inside the cavity both affect the flavor and they get into the meat without injecting this water that makes it taste again like luncheon meat. So this is taking a tip from the country's best roast chicken, which was Judy Rogers, the late Judy Rogers at the Zuni Cafe, and I would say not even a close second, equally great was Gordon Hammersley's roast chicken, which has been published in the Globe. He based a whole book on it. But again, they use dry brines. They don't use wet brines.
What are you laughing about, Marjorie?
I'm laughing at the way you're ooing and eyeing at Corby's.
Well, it sounds great. So can we play a little?
Hold on. What happened to the fryolator? Weren't we supposed to? Wasn't that a big craze a couple of years ago?
Some people are still doing it.
You get a big fry thing and you plop it in and hope it doesn't explode in the driveway.
It does explode and it grease in every bite.
Okay, so obviously okay. You're not supporting that. Here is we play a little bit of President Trump doing this ridiculous, and it's not his fault because the president's been doing. I guess Kennedy started the high profile thing. Here is Trump auditioning, I would argue, for the comedic act now that there isn't going to be one at this year's White House Correspondents' Dinner. Here's the pardoning.
Even though peas and carrots have received a presidential pardon, I have warned them that House Democrats are likely to issue them both subpoenas.
Marjorie's
nonetheless,
laughing.
In
this
the
incredible.
Spirit of Thanksgiving, I will be issuing both peas and carrots a presidential pardon. Unfortunately, I can't guarantee that your pardons won't be enjoined by the Ninth Circuit. Always happens. They're guaranteed.
Okay, Marjorie thought that was
funny. I
kind
of liked it. He's okay. Making me hate the Ninth Circuit in California. He thought it was a little joke about that.
Okay, so you don't like
Democrats,
turkey, you too. You like this ridiculous tradition that I think every president since JFK has done. Do you like that, Corby Comer?
You know, I think it's great because it draws attention to the cruelty of the national slaughter of millions of turkeys. No, it doesn't really. But the irony of Trump's having said in the clip you played earlier, it's going to be that the turkeys he pardons will be well cared for by students of poultry science who are only funded to be poultry science students so that they can assist in the raising and mass slaughter of chicken and turkeys. Otherwise, they would not be students of poultry science. That's why it exists.
It's really a downer,
so it's this funny thing. When JFK in November 19th, 1963, 3 days before he was killed, received a 55-pound live turkey and said, we'll just let this one grow. So that was where this tradition began. It was Ronald Reagan who first used the word pardon at a presentation because he was being asked whether he was going to pardon Oliver North and Robert Poindexter, who were part of Iran-Contra, and said, maybe I'll pardon him. So it entered into the lexicon. And the first president, George H.W. Bush, started the turkey pardoning in 1989.
Boy, you really know your stuff
on
turkey pardoning.
Well, you know, you probably know about this, too. We talked about this. I don't think it was with you, Corby. Did we talk with you about the turkey trots when they walked miles miles?
Turkey drives.
Yeah, the turkey drives, like cattle drives.
That's where turkey trot came from, the popular dance.
Yeah, and talking about how they came, like, from Vermont to Boston, and they had to sometimes cross rivers and... I mean, craziness by the hundreds.
It's before the trucks like the ones you just saw carrying Christmas trees outside your window.
Yeah.
That was the way to get them on their own feet.
You know, we only have a minute left. Did you? Dante Ramos was with us yesterday from the Globe. He wrote a piece about, when did he write this? This weekend?
About the Brooklyn
about
turkeys.
How we should eat the wild turkeys.
Yeah.
And my understanding was he was making some distinction between some kinds of wild turkeys and others. And putting aside of the fact that you're probably breaking the law if you kill one of these things and eat it, putting that aside for a moment, are the wild turkeys even edible?
Of course they're edible, but I have to think immediately of my stepson in Plymouth and his wife who love the wild turkeys and welcome them to their back lawn and become familial. They're like pets. And in Jamaica Plain, they just stand in front of my car like, who do you think you are? And why not? They do kind of rule the roost. They own the land. Yes, I have eaten wild turkeys. I've had wild turkeys.
And?
They're dry and stringy the way a lot of wild birds are, and there's a very low ratio of meat because we're used to these ridiculously overbred, fattened, unable to walk turkeys that have been bred just so that they have the meat and they look plump. But they're dark meat mostly, and they taste perfectly good.
Has any of your friends ever told you you're a very negative person, Corby? Really,
I love wild duck. I love
Wild
duck.
That's better.
So you're not like big into the Butterball or the Butterball Turkey Hotline, the ladies out there in Kansas.
We used to call Miss Butterball on the toll-free line on the radio live years ago.
Yeah, it turns out there were quite a few of them, though,
right? There were hundreds of them.
So getting back to brining for just
1 second. 30 seconds.
Heirloom turkeys have been bred to have better flavor. They're less plump. They are drier, but they have fantastic flavor. They're much more like chicken or wild bird.
Okay, nice try.
Next year, Jim.
Happy Thanksgiving anyway, Corby Comer.
Thank you very much.
See you.
Too late. I'm glad I didn't brine the turkey.
God.
Because it would be, I guess it would be like a waterlogged deal.
Well, he says it tastes like luncheon meat.
I know.
Anyway. I happen to like luncheon meat, so I guess that's...
Well, it's not what you don't like, Jim. Let's be honest.
That's a good point. Cold goat cheese is all I will not eat.
Okay, award-winning food writer Corby Comer joins us every week. He's senior editor at The Atlantic, a senior lecturer at Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition and Policy. Coming up, are you morally obliged to call out your racist relatives at Thanksgiving dinner and cause a big fight? Our medical ethicist Art Kaplan joins for that and more next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.